And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear those co-hosts shouting, it's Danger and Jay.
Welcome into the latest edition of Hear That Podcast, ground presented by Visa Network, working for everyone. Paul Inner Jr., Jay Morrison of The Athletic, here working for you. And unfortunately, Jay, we are not working with beer next to us and volleyball being played off in the distance and kids running in sand and people here listening to us. We're inside of a room inside Paul Brown Stadium without a window. It's kind of sad.
It is, but fortunately, we will be alive tomorrow to talk about this.
Yeah, it was supposed to be at 50 West, but unfortunately, severe weather has brought us inside Paul Brown Stadium. But we are still here with Bengals Director of College Scouting, Mike Potts, to do what we would have done in a much more fun environment, but we're still here. Potsy, what's going on?
Not too much, guys. I'm happy that we're here in person, and you know, we finally get to do that after those past couple years.
Yeah,
and the way everything went. But I was looking forward to some nice weather and hanging out with you guys outside. But the good news is, at least we get to be in person together. So look at it from the positive spin.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a busy long time for you. Wouldn't even call it a couple of weeks. I wouldn't call it a couple of months. Just a busy everything, you know, from the Super Bowl run all the way down to having to get everybody caught up. And then, you know, you guys grinding so hard to try to put this class together. How much did you end up, now that you can kind of look back and see everything you guys did, how much did the way the season played out change a little bit of your guys' schedule, how you like to do things, maybe you guys choosing to do some things differently in putting together your run-up to doing the class?
Yeah, it definitely affected us a little bit. I think overall, you know, we still accomplished the same goal of all the work that we like to get done during our process. It's just, you know, I think back to the All-Star games that we our group of scouts flew all the way out to LA for the NFLPA game. We're out there for a week, and then we pop from there to Las Vegas, which is where they moved the East-West Shrine game to this year. Vegas to Kansas City for the AFC Championship game, and then we're on a 6 a.m. flight the morning after the AFC Championship game to Mobile for the Senior Bowl, like I talked to you guys about. So, you know, it kind of – everything just kind of ran together as far as being – there not being more breaks in the calendar that, you know, there would have been on a year where we didn't make the playoffs or didn't make a deep run. But obviously that's a good problem to have. And then when we're out there in L.A., we're out there for the whole week. So we just had to get an office set up in the conference rooms at the hotel we were staying at, so we could get our film work done and, you know, do our cross checks and All-Star game evaluations and everything like that. So we just had to think outside the box a little bit, but we still accomplished the same goal and got the same work done. But yeah, it has been a long year overall. But again, you know, you wouldn't want it any other way. We just hope we're picking one spot later next year. So
that's what I was going to say. It's hard. It's more difficult. But that's something that you're hoping becomes the new reality, where maybe you learn how to manage your time better in that month.
Yeah, absolutely. We're, you know, maybe it's something that we look at moving forward, whether we need to adjust our meeting schedule or maybe do some more things remotely, whether it's at the Senior Bowl, at the Combine. We did do some of that this year in terms of having some more so informal, but we still had some meetings like in our interview suite there at Lucas Oil at the Combine. So there are some things that you know, we tried to incorporate to make it more efficient. And, you know, obviously some of that is the coaches getting in later in the process than they normally would, you know, as far as us getting on the same page. So, you know, we had to play a little bit of catch up on that end, but on the scouting end, it really wasn't all that different.
Well, and it's easier when you don't feel like you're drafting for extreme need, huh? I mean, you know, you come in, you have a team that didn't need a starter, you know, that you've got darn near your whole defense back, and knowing that you have to draft for that side of the ball. And offense, you're looking, okay, we can find rotational, we can find depth, we can find competition. But, man, that's so different to the last couple of years. How did that change? I mean, it doesn't change anything. You're still, you know, you're still scouting everybody, you're still grading everybody, you're still going through your process. But, the focus on, man, we really need this, did that change things a little bit for you? Well, how did that kind of affect what you guys were doing?
I don't think it affected us a whole lot. I think it's, like you said, it's the same process. We grade everybody. We rank them. You know, our process is we kind of stack them 1 to 31 or whatever slot that we're picking in. We stack those guys in order regardless of position. And I think we actually went up to 63 this year. And then we kind of have groupings by position after that, further to the right on the board. And then we'll do the same thing going into day two and day three of the draft. So maybe it affected a little bit more with the positions of need, so to speak, depth-wise. I think you always want to build depth. And part of the reason it didn't affect us a ton would be for the fact that our needs right now are not necessarily going to be the same needs in 2 or 3 months, you know. So and filling all the needs in the draft is not necessarily, you know, everybody wants to say, oh, well, we still got this need. You're never going to fill every single need, in my opinion. It's an ongoing process of acquiring talent. You know, you look at last year with the trade that we made, getting BJ Hill and a 7th round pick from New York, and then, you know, after the season, you know, he's getting big sacks for us in the playoffs, interception in the AFC Championship game, and then he signs a big deal with us. So, you know, that's just an example of we're always going to continue to look to fill those holes. And that's kind of the argument to take the best player available approach. Now, you know, that's incorporated with positions of need. Obviously, you're not going to always just do that. So there's a lot of different factors that play in. But at the end of the day, it was nice to not necessarily feel pressed to where maybe you value that position of need a little bit more than you necessarily felt comfortable doing. You know, had more holes to fill.
Yeah. Right. Is this process kind of the same for you every year, where you're grading the guys on talent, or is there a symmetry that kind of develops with a new coaching staff? You know, this is the 4th time around with Zach, where you have a better idea of the players that the coaching staff wants and the scheme and all that. Are you just based solely on talent when you're evaluating these guys, or do you take into account that the culture, the character aspect that he puts so much emphasis on, and specific scheme?
Absolutely. I mean, there's 3 pieces to the evaluation. It's the pure talent, which you see on tape, which you see, you know, and that incorporates also his testing numbers and all of that from the combine or the pro day. So there's a pure talent evaluation on tape, and then there's the character evaluation, and then the medical as well. And then we've got to incorporate all 3 of those. That's part of what Duke and I have to do is take our grades from the scouts, what they see as the player, you know, how we've graded the person and his football character and his personal character. And then you have to incorporate the medical into it and really put, we call it a Bengal rank. So that's essentially our team grade on the guy. You know, we may have a couple, you know, a 4th round grade, a 3rd round grade, and a 2nd round grade on a guy. That doesn't necessarily mean we're splitting the difference. We have to then incorporate our opinions of the player. And then also, you know, you may shade a guy up or down a little bit. Like I said, when we're stacking that 1 to 31, those character and medical and scheme fit also is another big part of it as well. So it's a combination of all those things to put that final Bengal rank on the guy. But in terms of this is my 4th draft as in my current position, so that kind of coincides. I got this position prior to Zach being hired, but after the draft, prior to him getting the head coach job. So we've kind of been, I would say we see players very, very similarly, mm-hmm. our scouting staff and our whole coaching staff. But that being said, we're always in communication. It's not like we had like some, you know, the head coach or position coach or whatever stood in front of the room and said, this is exactly what we want. Or the scouts are like, these are exactly the type of players that we like. It's just been constant communication over time. And really, the good news is we're looking for the same exact things from the players, you know, both as a player and as a person. So it's been a good mesh that way.
So you go through the draft, and what you guys were kind of focused on was obvious to anybody. You end up with a bunch of defensive guys, a bunch of secondary guys, a bunch of fast guys, a bunch of versatile guys. There was definitely common themes. I wanted to ask you this, though, before we get into the guys. You talk about constant conversations that you guys are always having. How much was you guys were going through all these conversations during last year, watching what Lou's defense was doing and how they were doing it, and kind of with these different game plans every week, and then knowing that you had to kind of rebuild the foundation of the defense going forward, come to the fact that, look, positionless players, versatile players is kind of the future of the – do we have to kind of predict the future of the NFL defense reacting to this trend that, oh, by the way, we kind of helped set in motion with the receivers. Did you have to kind of look at it that way a little bit?
Yeah, our scouts are constantly talking about that. We're a really tight-knit group, and we want to stay ahead of the curve. We don't want to be playing catch-up and, you know, saying, oh, you know, this is the trend, the way it's going. Okay, we've got to react. We want to stay ahead of that. And obviously with the offensive weapons – across the league, you know, in our division, across the AFC, in the NFC as well, obviously, there's some dangerous guys that you have to match up with. So I would say that's one thing, you know, in terms of how we want to combat that. And then also injuries, you know, call it what it is, knock on wood, there's going to be injuries. And that's, you know, it's a war of attrition to a certain extent in the NFL. You know, the teams that are the healthiest going into January are usually the teams that are set up the best to succeed. So that's where that versatility comes in as well. You know, if you've got, you know, a safety that can play corner and your corner goes out and the guy can slide out there and play, you know, if the guy can play nickel, if you've got a pass rusher that can kick inside, if you've got, you know, an edge guy who can stand up and play some linebacker, and the same thing, you know, multiple spots on the offensive line, receivers that can slide out in the slot for you and run routes and catch passes. It just helps you with multiple ways that, you know, our coaches can use those guys to attack offenses and defenses that we're going against. And then also for the injury factor and just, you know, how they can fill in and help us get out of those rough patches.
I mean, I think we were talking a sec about, look, you know, the versatility and all this stuff. It's like, you know, I can't tell you how many times we're watching these teams come in December or we're playing them in January and they're having to pull guys off the practice squad to come fill out. You better believe the offensive coordinator sitting there saying, target this guy. You know, if you have enough people that can keep where the fall off is not so drastic just because of what those guys can do.
For sure.
That brings us to Dax Hill, right? To number one overall, and the reason why you guys liked him so much. I know AJ was in love with him. He told me he was his favorite player in this whole draft. And he was sweating like the Dickens as they were. You guys were waiting to see if the board was going to break for you. What was your? Where did it start with Dax Hill? When did you first start to get the impressions? And when did he kind of become? Man, that Bengal rank really made so much sense with him.
Yeah, we've been looking at him and aware of him for a number of years now. You know, our scouts all really liked him. Our coaches really liked him. We really had consensus on the guy across the board. So when that's the case, it's an easy selection. But for me, I went to Michigan in camp, and, you know, that's kind of where the process started of seeing him at practice. You know, hey, this guy's a little different than, you know, just in the way he moves, how long he is, explosive. you mentioned the versatility. So he had a great practice, you know, the day I was there, just speaking from my experience. And then you go back and watch the tape and you're impressed with everything he does. Again, the length, versatility, speed, you know, he's got ball production. He's instinctive. He's a tough guy. You know, he'll throw his body around as a tackler. So really when you're looking at him, there's really not a whole lot to dislike about the player. So, you know, that's, like you said, that was a spot that we wanted to address, obviously, defensive backfield. We weren't gonna, you know, we didn't want to reach on a guy just because he was a DB, and DB was one of the top places we wanted to address. But you go through scenarios, and you're like, hey, if we get this guy in the first round, how does that correlate with what we could address in the second, third, fourth round, and so on? So you'd love to address those needs if you can, but you know, it doesn't always fall that way. And it did fall pretty well. We were picked over pretty heavily in some other rounds, but we were actually pleasantly surprised with the options we had available to us there at 31. And obviously he was the top guy on the board. So,
all right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Two other DBs you take, you guys actually trade up to get them, and that's rare for this team. There hasn't been a lot of instances of that. What is that like when it's, you know, picks are ticking away, and you're sitting there waiting, hoping Cam's going to be there? How big of a sweat is that to before you finally say, okay, we can't wait any longer, we got to trade up?
It's a tough spot to be in because, like I said, that the second round was certainly a spot where we got picked over. I don't know. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it was something like we were, let's say, 8 picks away. And, you know, there was like probably roughly 5 guys we felt really good about at that point. And then maybe, you know, those 5 guys, you know, or 4 of those 5 guys go in the next 5 picks or something like that, you know, roughly. And those aren't exact numbers, but it was just like, you're just like, oh crap. You know, this is not breaking our way the way, you know, maybe it did the way I was describing the first round and the way that board fell. So Cam Taylor-Britt was a guy going in that we kind of had targeted. We brought him here for a visit. We love what he's all about, his competitiveness, his physicality. He can run. He's got long arms. He plays the ball well. So there's a lot of things we loved about him. He was a guy that we targeted. We kept going through these scenarios. We're like, you know, if we take this position in the first round and we're going corner in the second round, you know, the odds are, just with the way we're projecting it, both off of our board, both off of league value, and then, you know, maybe public perception, you put that in there a little bit, you know, some of the rankings, some of the media stuff, whatever. But, like, you know, that's also separate from our intel on what other teams think. In terms of league value, we just thought it would be tight whether he would be there or not. And once we really started to get picked over, we were like, hey, like, you know, there's a sense of urgency here. We need to start making some calls and you know, see if we can get something worked out. So I'm glad we you know, he was kind of that last guy sitting there, the group of guys that we liked. So when that happens, when you've got 5 guys and you know you're 3 picks away, then you feel great about it. You're not gonna be as pressed to move up and you know, get aggressive and give up. We never, I think Duke said it, we're never interested in giving up picks if we don't have to. But we felt in that case, everybody was on board that, hey, let's go get a guy that, whether it's as a rookie or into the future, we think can be a starting corner in this league. And like I said, we love the player and we love the intangibles and all he's about, you know, in terms of his personal and football character as well. So that's why we kind of felt the urgency to go up and get him, and we're glad we were able to work something out.
You guys, you know, you were talking about different paths. If you did this, then that. How many different divergent paths were kind of pinning on what ended up falling to you in one? Because I know we talked to a lot of you guys. We're talking about before we get up to the draft, and Duke talked about this. It was very unpredictable what was going to happen, just because the nature of the top 10 being weird and mm-hmm. just how much did you kind of have to plan for, like, there's going to be a lot of different paths that are going to go off depending on what happens at one and then two? Was that kind of harder this year than most years?
It's funny because, and I think I talked to you about this, Paul, the everybody was saying how unpredictable this draft was, and I thought the same thing, but it actually, when we're looking at our draft board on draft day, it was a lot more predictable than we thought it was going to be with the way our board just got decimated, you know, in the first 2 to 3 rounds. So it was, you know, I think the uncertainty with the top quarterbacks in this draft kind of, you know, I don't think anybody thought that some of those quarterbacks were going to fall as far as they did. So that maybe played into it, but like take the quarterbacks out of it. I think everybody was, you know, quote unquote, hunting the same group of players. There's always going to be a couple outliers here and there. You know, maybe a guy we had in the fourth round that goes in the second or whatever the case is. Everybody values guys differently, you know, whether it's because of scheme, whether they, you know, everybody has the same character or medical information or whatever it may be. But it actually, it's just funny. It turned out to be a more predictable draft, I think, than we expected it to be. So we did go through those scenarios. You know, maybe you take Dax Hill and, you know, it remains to be seen what his best position is going to be. But, like, you know, if you have him as a safety right now, you know, you're probably not as likely to take a safety in the second round. Just, you know, just going through the scenarios of positions and how it could play out. But that being said, if there's safeties that – and there were some other safeties that we really liked in this draft, you're not going to push them down too far. But maybe, you know, maybe that's a tiebreaker if you've got a guy with the same grade at another position. Maybe you slot the other position, you know, corner in this case, over a guy. So, yeah, there was a lot of different scenarios. And, again, you know, obviously the positions we took are the positions – well, it's not obvious, but the positions we took are the ones we did want to prioritize, and that's just how it played out. But we didn't want to eliminate, you know, a guy at another position that we had super high grades on just because he's not a quote unquote position in need. Because again, it could be a position in need 2 months ago or 2 months from now. Just, you know, just because it's not necessarily one today doesn't mean it may not be a need in the future. So,
something you said earlier about you put this Bengals score on these guys. And then you also mentioned that you're mindful of the media perception, the other mocks and stuff that are out there. So you look at guys like Carter and Volson, who maybe could have gone later. But so how does that play out with you guys where you say, we've got a grade on him here, but the perception is maybe he goes later. Do we roll the dice and not take him here and wait? Or is it just a matter of just sticking to your board? We've got this score on him and we like him here in the third round. Yeah. With Carter specifically.
There's a combination of, I think, sticking to your board and then the amount of players at that spot that are available to you. And then we have guys, those two guys that you mentioned included in this group, we have guys that are targeted that we think are a great fit for what we need, how he fits in on our roster and in our scheme, and then they're the right type of people that we want from a character standpoint. So maybe somebody else that was higher rated than some of those guys and something in the media, or maybe even another team had them higher. There's probably reasons behind the scenes that we have those guys lower than some of these guys, Carter, Volson, et cetera. Really all the guys we drafted. So you do have to weigh that. I think at the end of the day, we thought those guys were one of the last ones at the position. Both of those, the three technique and the now Carter can play some end as well, but we think he can really help us as a three technique. And then the offensive line, guard, tackle, versatility with Volson. Those are two spots that we wanted to address, and those guys kind of stood out. You know, maybe if there's five guys that we felt the same about, we'd be like, hey, let's roll the dice. Maybe they'll be there around later. We just didn't think it was worth the risk, and maybe they would have been there around later. We didn't think at the end of the day, we didn't feel strong enough that they would be. So, you know, we'll see how they end up playing out. But, you know, we just thought for those reasons, those were the guys that were the best fit for us in those rounds.
In regards to Carter, you mentioned the versatility that he has through, you know, obviously you guys were looking to fill the teammate with BJ Hill to kind of play and back him up and give you something. But you guys seem to really be focused in on that, you know, the outside to inside versatility on that position. And why was that so important versus a guy who's obviously, he's basically just going to play three technique. He's not really got an outside body. You know, you're going to get what, 280, 285, whatever, kind of like Carter's build versus like, okay, this is a straight, is that just about team versatility, something that you guys just want your linemen to have more of that? Or do you feel like that was kind of almost a missing hole on your roster at this point? We don't have that maybe type a guy the way you'd like to?
I do think we have Cam Sample who can do some of that. I think he can do outside, inside stuff for us. You know, Zach Carter, I think, was 282 or somewhere in that range at the combine, if I remember correctly. He's, you know, from our scouts, myself included, that went through there. He's been up in the 290 range before. So we think he can still add some weight and potentially be. I don't think he's there right now. There's going to be a little bit more development. We think he can potentially be a three down player on the inside at three technique. But right now, you know, it's just a matter of where Lou sees him. Where is he going to play him on first down on run downs? He definitely can play on the edge and set an edge for you and play the run for sure off the edge. And he can give you some pass rush off the edge as well. But I don't know. I don't think it's something where we definitely went in and said, hey, we have to have an inside outside guy with versatility, because, you know, even Sam Hubbard can kick inside right. and rush over the guard on passing downs as well. So we do. I don't think we were necessarily missing that player. I think we just really wanted to, you know, with Larry being a free agent right now, he was so huge for us last year. BJ was so huge for us. We just really value that interior rush, and we thought Zach Carter was just the next guy that could give us that. And it remains to be seen. Maybe he is a you know, first and second down defensive end and a third down interior guy, or maybe he develops into a three down, three technique, 3-5, 4-eye, things of that nature in terms of his alignment. We're just going to have to work through that. But he has been a little bit bigger. A lot of times the numbers at the combine are a little bit deceiving because they try to lose a little bit of weight to mm-hmm. run a faster 40, whatever mm-hmm. the case may be. But he's a guy that again, we had consensus on, you know, between the scouts and coaches, we all like the player. And, you know, again, we didn't want to run the risk of him potentially being there a little bit later in the draft. So
what was it about Tyson Anderson? You've already got two DBs. You've already got this emphasis on defense. You're in the fifth round, and you guys trade up 8 spots to get him. I imagine at that point there's probably, I don't know, it seems like there's less of a variance of players there. Why were you guys so intent on moving up that far to get that guy?
We just had a high regard for him as a player and as a person. You know, I'm sure you guys have talked to him, three-time captain. The character's very good. And he's a guy that was at least in the discussion for us in earlier rounds. Maybe part of the reason we shied away from him was we already took Dax Hill, who we think can be a really good safety for us. But, you know, we just thought the value there was too much to risk him going. You know, we do all the analysis of what teams need, and, you know, there's a number of teams in front of us there, and then we thought that with the Cam Taylor-Britt pick as well, we thought there was teams that certainly could take DBs in those slots. We thought he was far and away the next best guy, really at both in both scenarios, second and fifth round we're talking. So we just thought and that's not even incorporating teams could trade up and get in front of you. It doesn't necessarily matter just because these teams are the next few teams in front of you. That's not necessarily how it's going to play out. You know, there's tons of trades, obviously. And, you know, again, we had players. He's another guy that we targeted, and we just wanted to go up and get him and leave no doubt. And, you know, Mr. Brown signed off on it. He was on board with it, and we made some calls around to teams that were picking up in front of us, and we were able to work something out in that case with Chicago and gave up the seventh round pick to go up and get the guy that we wanted. Obviously, you know, we'll never know who we may have taken with that seventh round pick. The good news is we did agree to terms right now with a lot of college free agents that we probably would have considered a lot of those guys with that seventh round pick. So we definitely got a lot of caliber of players that, you know, that would have been in the discussion there. But, you know, again, you hate to give up picks, but we thought Tyson Anderson's value was strong enough and everybody was on board with the player and the person to where we felt like it was something that we had to do.
10 years to the draft that you guys took George Iloka in the fifth round, by the way, just, you know, just for reference of what that name can be, right? It can be a multi-year starter. That's great for you. And it's certainly there's some precedent there. I want to bring in, I was going to say, I have a few questions from listeners that maybe would have been doing it with us down at 50 West. We were there, but before I get to Gunter, I don't want to cut him off, but this is regarding what we were just talking about. He said, it was David Simone saying, regarding trading up, Philly and New York Jets had a lot of picks. They moved up to get more in the top 150. Do you think this is a trend? You know, you guys like picks, but with this draft, was the thought maybe get the most in the top 150? Maybe that there was kind of a cliff after that a little bit. Is that maybe part of the case?
I don't know if there was an exact number like with the 150, but yeah, that's a good thought. We got really thinned out there because, you know, our board was just getting crushed there in the first three rounds. You know, it probably evened out a little bit later in the draft. But I think it really, you know, regardless of putting an exact number, whether the number's 100, 150, 175, in terms of getting in that top range of picks, I think it just comes down to players that we have strong conviction on, that, you know, there's consensus. We want players that the personnel department loves, and then we also want players that our coaches love, so everybody's on board with them. That's going to put the player in the best spot to be successful going forward. You want everybody motivated for that guy to succeed, and when that's the case, those guys turn out, you know, through, you know, we meet pretty much the whole month of April to figure out those guys that, you know, specifically we target. We actually on our draft board color those guys in green, you know, to note that, hey, you know, there may be five safeties we have over here in the fourth round column, or, you know, whatever the case may be. But like this one guy right here is a guy that, you know, because of this, and this, everybody's on board with him. You know, he'd be the pick of the litter there in that group if it comes down to that point in the draft and we're able to select him.
All right, let's just take a quick break.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Did you guys just fall in love with Coastal Carolina? I guess it's just like, you know what, I just feel like I just love what they're doing there, and they're the secret of all of college football, because, you know, you guys might have a couple more assuming they can get in here and be undrafted free agents, and then you take Gunter. Was there something about that team? We just went down there and you just said, I spent time at the beach. It was the best trip I ever had in my life. I just loved everything about it. I'm going to just keep that feeling alive.
I wish we could comment on the college free agents right now, but yeah, there may be a couple more Chanticleers coming and joining the Bengals as well. It just broke out that way. There was four players there that we had solid draftable grades on, including the tight end likely that was drafted as well. So Troy Brown was, you know, he's the primary scout on that one. You know, he comes back with the reports. Like I said, we're in constant communication. So he's calling me about all these. And there was some other players there that he liked as well after his first visit. So he called me and said, hey, you know, I don't know what your schedule is coming up, but you might want to pop down there and get your eyes on these guys. So I kind of changed some things around in my schedule to get down there as well. It's in like Conway, South Carolina, just outside of Myrtle Beach. So it's not necessarily the easiest place to get to when you're working in other schools. But when you've got four high level guys that are scouts alike, then, you know, it's kind of my responsibility to kind of get an additional look on a lot of guys, you know, in that case where maybe we didn't initially have them on our schedule for multiple scouts going through there. But I'm glad I went down there and Trey did a great job scouting those guys, and we're excited about the guys that we're going to get. We may have to circle back and talk about the college free agents at a later date. So we can't name them by name, but Gunter, it's a similar conversation to some of these other guys that we talked about in the first few picks. He just stuck out on our board with the grades that we had on him. You know, he was and Wyatt Hubert was the same case last year. We had strong grades on him, and we always go through, you know, you talk about position of need, everybody's like, oh, maybe you could have taken whatever, a running back, a tight end, a receiver. Well, no, if we have this guy with, you know, a significantly stronger grade, you go ahead and take him. Like, you know, with Wyatt Hubert last year, we had already taken two edge guys, and he was the third, I believe, if I remember right. Yeah. Osai and Cam Sample, yeah. So, you know, maybe some people would consider it overkill, but, you know, we just stuck to it. And again, he was the top player graded on our board at that point. He's a really impressive looking kid. Extremely long arms, you know, he's yoked up. He was productive there. He's got speed, power in his game, heavy hands. We saw him at the East West game on that 2 week bender that we were on the All Star games and the AFC Championship game. Our scouting department was popping airport to airport, rental car to rental car that couple weeks. But yeah, we saw him there at the East West game in Las Vegas. During that trip, and he had a really good week there, really impressive. And he's another guy. I don't know how much he'll do it for us once our coaches get their hands on him. You know, they'll have to develop more of a vision for him. But he's another guy that was versatile as well. He did some, you know, true 3-4 outside backer stuff where he's dropping in space. He did some great stuff as a pass rusher coming off the edge, and then they also kicked him inside as well at Coastal Carolina. So. You know, he's a guy who's, I want to say he was 258, somewhere in there at the combine, but he's been up in the 270s before. So, again, that, you know, I don't necessarily look at it as like an overall theme of the class of like the versatility, speed, attacking defense. I just kind of look at it as each individual pick. But in terms of theme of versatility with all these guys, he's another one that falls into that category.
I do want to bring in, you kind of touched on this a little bit, but a question from Kevin K, who said, I know there's a big squad at the Senior Bowl. How did you guys handle, do you handle the Shrine Bowl? Three guys from this year. Is that game, I don't know, kind of on top of that, is that game kind of on the come up a little bit? Are you seeing a little bit more action coming from that? Or I know there's a lot of guys that went Shrine Bowl with the promotion to the Senior Bowl too this year. I mean, how did you guys kind of take on that
game? We go to the Shrine game every year. It used to be in St. Pete, and it was other places prior to that. But ever since I've been scouting, it's been in St. Pete up until this year. It moved to Las Vegas. They did it in conjunction with the Pro Bowl week. So, you know, the East-West practice there, and then the Pro Bowl, I guess, was that Thursday, I believe, if I remember right, something like that. But yeah, we go to the Shrine Bowl every year. I think we took two guys out of there, three Senior Bowl guys, and then Dax Hill's a junior, so he wasn't at an All Star game. But yeah, you know, the Shrine and the NFLPA game as well have done a great job of getting some of that talent. And you know, there's some guys like you said that, you know, they show out at that week. The first week, so to speak, of those big three All-Star games, and then they get the promotion up there to the Senior Bowl. So that's just a big part of our scouting process for, you know, in terms of getting another set of eyes, or even if you've already seen some of those players, you get to see them in person an additional time, and then the face-to-face interview time that we get with them as well, you know, 20 to 20 minutes or so with each player. That's obviously huge in our process. So Yeah, we're glad we're going to continue doing that, and we go to, you know, there's a number of lower level All-Star games as well that we attend every year, and some of those have had some guys drafted as well this year, so it's a big part of the process.
I was wondering, kind of, I know you can't talk about specific players, but the undrafted free agency process, like I have a pretty good idea of what a war room looks like during the draft, but I am really intrigued by how does that happen? Are you guys all on the phone with guys trying to recruit them to come here? How furious is it? And where's the mechanics for a guy? Because they don't sign until they get here next week. So right. A guy could say, yeah, I'm going to come, and then flip on you. How do you prevent that?
Yeah, so it's mayhem. I mean, we do our best to have it streamlined and organized, but we split it up, scouts and coaches by position, just attacking the guys. And then, you know, we may get, Zach on the phone with a guy, you know, maybe Duke gets on the phone with a guy, you know, if it turns into a recruiting, type deal there after the draft. There's obviously agents, you know, trying to, they're contacting us, like once they get in the late sixth round or so and they're scared their guy might not get drafted, they're contacting us. Obviously we can't break the rules and agree to any terms officially with guys until the final pick of the draft is over, so there's a fine line that you have to balance there, but it's a crazy process, and we do our best to kind of have guys that we target. Now there may be a guy that we had a fifth round grade on that we didn't expect to go undrafted, and then you kind of have to incorporate him into your target list as well. But yeah, like I said, I wish I could talk about some of the specific guys because there are some college free agents that we've agreed to terms with that we're really excited about. But part of it, to answer the other part of your question, is developing a relationship with the players throughout the process and the agent to where that word is firm and they're committed to you and they're coming. Now, obviously, if a guy's just committed for a rookie minicamp tryout, then they're free to go and sign with the team if they get an actual contract. But we feel like we're pretty solid with all of these guys to where, you know, they're committed to us and we're committed to them. And then just from here on out, it would be them coming in next weekend for the rookie mini camp. As long as they pass the physical, then the contract would get executed at that point.
We get into here now, you guys are going to do the mini camp and all that stuff, and the schedule is truncated. How different is the, you know, the new schedule and how much do you guys start talking about plans for how to get a guy going into the coaching system? Or is it like players drafted, baton handed to coaches? how much is that kind of a tug back and forth? Or is there a kind of a group plan that gets together with working with guys that come in?
Yeah, it's huge. We've started it the past few years, and we'll have ownership involved. We'll have Eric Ball, you know, our director of player development, player engagement, you know, in terms of a plan for them on and off the field. The coaches as well, you know, just in terms of the type of support this guy needs, because let's face it, they don't have classes to go to. A lot of these guys, especially from big time programs, have a lot more support in place in terms of staffing at the colleges than NFL teams do. So there's just a lot more there in terms of structure that we're very mindful of. So we'll have that meeting before they get here for rookie minicamp with everybody on board, coaches, personnel staff, ownership, our player engagement group, you know, really anybody that could touch the player, our strength staff, our trainers, everybody will be on the same page of like, this is the structure that we need in place for this guy. And some guys obviously need more support than others, but we'll have a plan for everybody. And that's something that, you know, we're proud of the past few years that we've tried to put in place. And you know, obviously some guys mature and develop at different rates. Some guys come in as ready-made pros, and that's something that's part of the information we get through the scouting process. So we do our best through interviewing the player himself and talking to the sources at the school to paint a picture of the player and what we're getting, you know, both as a player and as a person, and then just trying to set them up to be successful. And I think it's been a good process. We're constantly trying to improve it as we go forward. So that'll be part of the discussions here the next couple of weeks.
One last question that we have from listeners. Are you all aware of the fact that ESPN has an uncanny propensity for going to commercial break when the Bengals are on the clock and making their pick? Apparently fans are very aware of this, which I knew because they always do. It is something that I always hear complained about. Right? Are you guys aware of that?
I have heard about that secondhand. I didn't see that myself, but we actually have NFL Network. Nothing against ESPN, but we actually have NFL Network on for whatever reason. That's not my choice per se, but on the TV we have in the draft room, it's usually on mute, and then we'll unmute it like when our selection's about to be made. But we have had the past several years NFL Network on, so maybe their commercial schedule is a little different than ESPN.
You don't notice the commercials. Okay. Well, you guys, people don't realize that there's a league in-house screen that is giving the picks. So you guys that are well ahead of TV, right? I mean, you guys will have made your pick maybe 10 minutes ago. And it's still not even on the show.
It might be 10, 15 minutes. Yeah, the pick that's coming up on the TV might be 3 or 4 picks behind at certain times of the draft. They try to ask us to spread the picks out a little bit so they can get the proper coverage and highlights shown and videos and all that stuff. I think there was a deal with Detroit where they submitted their second pick of the draft a little bit too early.
Too quick.
I think I saw that.
Yeah.
They tell us to wait until there's under 5 minutes on the clock for that first round.
Which we all learned during the Joe Burrow pick because it was everybody knows what's going on. It had to be drawn out. It's like, no, the league wants you to draw this out so they could talk about it. And it was like, you know, you could have turned that pick in, what, like 2 months ago probably. But, you know, everybody let the time play out. It's the broadcast. Hey, look, everybody, we even catch some pieces of that coming downhill. Everybody is paid off of these television programs to play along nicely. Okay, and enjoy the show. So, congratulations to you guys, man. On you guys put in so much work year round. In fact, you're probably just came down here from putting on tape of the 2023 class, right? I mean, it was funny actually. I was talking to AJ, and he said, you know, the first time I actually ever kind of brought Dax Hill was I made a 10 play cut up and almost exact this time last year took it to Duke and said, hey, you may want to take a look at this. And that was the beginning. almost a year to the day, you know, right in this time right after the draft where it's the first little pieces of the next class start to show up and off you go. It's like, where's the vacation? I don't know. You guys, I guess you're not in it for vacation time because there's not a ton of it.
Yeah, it's been a long year. We'll definitely get some time to exhale. I feel like I haven't spent enough time with my wife and kids the past few months, but we'll be playing catch up here over the next month or two. But yeah, I mean, I'm proud of all the work our guys put in, our scouting staff, and yeah, I mean, it doesn't really feel like there's ever a whole lot of vacation time because there's always guys to be evaluated, and we've got a solid head start on next year's class, but. Yeah, we'll get it started here in due time. But it's important to have the balance as well. I mean, if you're just go, you end up burning yourself out. And this is certainly a year where you've felt like you're on the verge of burnout at certain times. But we've done a good job of just powering through it. And we're happy with the results. And like I said early in the beginning, it's ongoing. We're still looking to. It's by far this is not the complete finished roster for the 2022 Bengals. We're going to continue to look to add players, you know, whether that's on the waiver wire, trades, guys that are out there on the street, free agents, and we'll just keep our eyes out there, and that's kind of the beauty of what we do with all of our scouts doing both pro and college work. So like I said, I'm proud of the group, and the work's over for a little bit, but you know, we'll constantly, you know, still keep our eye out there to ways to make the team better.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate your time. Sorry we couldn't do this and now go to the bar, but instead, I guess we'll leave it. It'll be much sadder, but we did it. So thanks, Mike. Appreciate your time, buddy.
Appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.